Welcome to the Create a Life You Love podcast. I'm your host, Chantel Cox. My purpose is to empower and lift up others who know in their heart they're meant for more. More joy, more impact, and more passion. If you're ready to make a radical transformation and create a life that you love, then you have come to the right place. Let's do this. And welcome everybody to today's episode of the Create a Life You Love podcast, where I get to connect with people from all over the world to share tips and strategies that can assist you on your own journey. So for those of you who don't know me, I'm your host, Chantel Cox. I'm an author and transformation coach who empowers motivated professional women who are ready to break free from the bondage of daily stress and anxiety so that they can step into their full potential and create a life that they love. I'm very excited to be here today with my good friend, Julie Eisenman. Julie is the founder of A Life Worth Living, where she empowers others to turn their tragedies into triumph. Hey, Julie, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Chantel?
Oh, you know me, living the dream. I know I've talked about my conference that I got to go to last May. That is where I originally connected with Julie and many of the other guests that have been on the podcast over the last couple months. So awesome. Julie, can you talk to us a little bit? You have an absolutely amazing story. Just share with us a little bit about your story and your background.
Sure. I grew up in one of the suburbs north of Chicago, and my mom and dad adopted me from the foundling's home, and my older brother, and went to good schools. Had a real tumultuous upbringing with my mom. Found out through a family counselor that she didn't want to adopt a little girl because she was afraid that that I would take away my dad's love for her. And so there was contention from the very beginning. And she was very abusive, mentally, emotionally, physically. We used to get into it, fight about 7 times a day. She brought out a lot of different things to try and get me into submission. And by the time I was 19 years old, I had been raped, sexually abused. I was alcoholic and drug abuser and didn't know it. And I wanted out of life. I was in college here in southwestern Colorado. And President Reagan got shot in 1981. And one of the girls in the dorm said, "Oh, darn, they missed him. He's not dead." And I was like, kidding me? I just couldn't believe that I heard that. And it was like, you know, and I had already been in and out of counseling most of my younger years. And I was in counseling at that time, one with a guy in college that was dealing with the past, and then another gal in Durango that was dealing with the present. And I thought I was gay, coming out of the closet, and suicidal, and went out on the side of the mountain, and I just asked God to take me. I was like, I'm done. Just take me. And there was no strong urge to jump. There was no bolt of lightning. There was no strong gust to blow me off the side of the mountain where I was at. And I walked up to the top, to the plateau, and was like, wow, you know, he didn't care either. And about 3 weeks later, 3 weeks later, my girlfriend called from Denver, and she had been gone for a while, and I said, "Where are you?" And she said, "I'm in Denver." And I said, "That's nice. What are you doing in Denver? Come back to Durango. I love you." And she says, "No, I can't." And I said, "Why not?" She said, "I found Jesus." And I was like, "That's nice." I'm like, "So come back to Durango." And she, "Oh, I can. I found Jesus." And I'm like, "Fine, bring him too. I want to know who stole my girlfriend. And what did he have that I didn't have that was holding her in Denver?" And she talked to me about Christianity and getting saved. I had been looking at different religions in college and Japanese culture and history. And I was liking Buddhism. I studied Hinduism, checked out a bunch of different churches in Durango. And I didn't know who was telling the truth, you know? who's, you know, which one's the right one? Who's telling the truth? And I was really leaning towards Buddha, because who doesn't like a fat, happy guy, you know? And then I found out that you got to, right? Then you got to come back. You got to keep coming back and everything in nirvana until you're perfect. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to come back here. I'm done. I don't like being here to begin with. You know, all the bad guys are out to get the good guys, and the good guys are me and a few select people that I would drink with. My drinking at the time was 15 kamikazes, a couple 77s for the road. I'd smoke a few joints and drink a few beers before I even went to the bars in the night. And, you know, I just get wasted. I think part of it was I was anesthetizing the pain, the emotional, mental pain that I had. And so anyway, they hooked me up with a gal in Durango. They said, go talk to her and she can explain things better. Her name's Valerie, and she's an ex Hell's Angel biker chick and former heroin addict. And I was like, oh, cool, right up my alley. Yeah, I'd like to meet her. So we met at the Denny's restaurant, and I asked her, I'm like, who is this Jesus? What's Sherry into? You know, what's this all about? And I said, how do you know who's telling the truth? And she said, you know, I had the same questions. And she said, I figured that, she said that the Bible was one of the oldest books in the world. It's survived about, you know, almost 2,000 years. And she said that before she gave her life to the Lord, the Bible never made sense to her. But when she gave her life to the Lord and started going to church, she would go to church. She would write down all the scriptures that the pastor would give out. And then she would go home and she would reread them. And she would either agree with them, disagree with them, or put them on a shelf. And she said that when she read the Bible, she asked God to show her what he wanted her to see. And it started making sense. And I was like, okay. I said, well, here's the big question. And I was like, when you're out of here and you die, you know, you guys keep talking about heaven. Do you stay up in heaven or do you have to come back? And she said, and she smiled, she laughed. She goes, no, we get to stay in heaven. She said, we're a spirit that lives, that has a soul that lives in a body. And we're only here like a wisp of time, a vapor. And so when we go back to heaven, we stay. And I'm like, fine, sign me up. I am a one trip chick. I do not want to come back here. And, so I did. So I went to a church that Sunday. It was Easter, April 19th, 1981. And I gave my life to the Lord, got baptized in the Holy Spirit. And out and telling everybody about Jesus. That's what I wanted to do. And, you know, I thought that I got the golden ticket. You know, you're a newer and all things are old and new things are there for you. And you're doing great. And you know, we were going to church five times a week. I went up to Denver and we're just friends. We, you know, decided that we weren't, you know, gay, that we were straight. We were going to do this thing. We were literally going to do the straight and narrow. And we were going to quit smoking, quit chewing tobacco, quit drinking, quit doing drugs, just quit wearing pants, start wearing dresses, wear makeup and all that stuff. And that didn't last very long. The night before we got baptized in full water at the Deliverance Ministry, we did some counseling there. And I had, I had slept with a lot of old men to get my booze back in Chicago. I used to get on the L train and go down to the north side when I was 14, 15, 16 years old and had a fake ID that I got that got me into some of those corner bars. The Mexican bars didn't serve me anymore, even though I spoke fluent Spanish. And the last bar in Chicago that would serve me was an all-guy gay bar on the north side. And I was never legal to drink. And we just thought we'd have a couple beers that night. And we were getting toasted. So we were pretty hammered. We tried sleeping out on the trampoline that night because we couldn't make it navigate down the stairs. We were so late. You know, one person moves, you're all drunk to begin with. We're thrown up all over the place in the morning and the hair's like all over the place. We could see the springs. I mean, it was just a painful night. We were, oh man, it was a bad hangover too. And, you know, we started out with a couple beers and we wound up almost finishing a case. And we went to the Deliverance Ministry and they were like, are you sorry? You know, and we're like, oh man, we screwed up. We're so sorry. And they're like, did you ask God for forgiveness? And I'm like, yes. And they said, well, come on in. And we got baptized in a horse trough because the church was in a barn and it was cold, freezing water. And they said that when we came up out of that water, we were glowing. It was the best thing for a hangover. But yeah, I continued on and went back to Illinois. And the lady said, don't hang out with your old friends. Satan's going to use them to get you back on his side because you changed teams and he's not happy that you're gone. So I'm like, okay. And don't hang out with your old friends you used to drink with. All right. So I was like, hey, I got the full armor of God. I want to go out and save everybody and tell them how great life is and how great Jesus is and how he loves everybody. And guy that I used to deal drugs with in high school called me up and he said, hey, let's go up to Great America to the amusement park. And you want to go? And I'm like, sure. I was like, one guy, yeah, I can handle it. He'll want to smoke his joint, but I'm not going to smoke with him. It'll be all right. I can tell him this. He'll be in the car for 45 minutes. He's a captive audience. And so we're there, the whole time, I hate to smoke alone. Come on, take a hit. I hate to smoke alone. We get up there and the park's closed. They won't let any more people in because it was full. Never happened before. So, I smoked with him about 10 minutes before we got to the park because I knew that once we got up on the roller coaster, you'd come down the high. When you come down off the roller coaster and when you're up in a plane getting high, like we used to do from Denver to Durango on the old planes back in the early 80s, when you come down, that you come down with a high. So anyway, make a long story short, went back to my parents' house, who are out of town. Kept smoking joints all the way back, hit the top three of the coating and then the liquor cabinet, wound up in bed and pregnant. And I was devastated. I thought, that's it. God's going to kill you. Because I didn't know grace. I didn't know what unmerited favor is. Whenever I screwed up as a kid, I got beat real bad for it. And especially when I did something I was told not to do. And so I came back out to Denver to have the baby and give him up for adoption. And I prayed every day for God to protect that baby and tried to do controlled drinking. And I would go out with friends from college, different set, so this should be okay. I was still going to church. I was a counselor on the Lifeline 3-5 days a week, and I would go out with friends thinking I'll just have a couple beers and space some water in between the beers and everything will be okay and I won't get drunk. That didn't work either. So after the first couple beers, man, I just would keep going. They'd pass around and my sips became swigs and then my swigs became logs. And then they stopped passing the bottle around because I was drinking too much on my turn. So my roommate and I had moved into a house with a couple that had two kids and her and I worked together at the same place. And we also went to the same church and she had been in Al-Anon for 7 years and he had been sober, I think, for about 5 years. And they kept saying, oh, somebody needs to do an inventory. You're real angry. You need to do an inventory. Do you think you're an alcoholic? And I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic. I had just turned 20 years old. I was 19, just turned 20. My dad's an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. I party, He's the one that drinks 7 to 8 double martinis after work at night. And so I was failing at trying to do controlled drinking. And Bob sat me down one day and I said, so what's an alcoholic? How can you be an alcoholic? You told me that you're only a beer drinker, right? And I'm like in my head going, hey, you're a lightweight. You're only drinking beer. And he said his clicker didn't work. And I'm like, what the heck do you mean your clicker doesn't work? And he said, Donna, who's an Al-Anon, she goes out and has a glass and a half of wine or whatever she's drinking. And I'm thinking a half? Wow, that's a waste. She's wasting a half a glass of alcohol. Man, where's she when she goes out? I ought to go out and I'd get some free booze. I'll finish it. And he said, she goes out, she has a glass of half of wine, she starts to get the buzz on, and her body screams, stop. She gets that out of control feeling. And she stops. And I'm like, okay. And he says, I have a couple beers. He said, my clicker doesn't say stop. My body screams more. And I was like, okay. And he gave me a 20 question test from a 12-step program. And it said, if you answered one question yes out of 20, you might be an alcoholic. If you answered two, you probably are an alcoholic. And if you answered three or more yes, then you're an alcoholic and you need to go to meetings. And I was like, nah, that can't be true. And so he said, can you go to a bar and drink just one drink? And I'm like, why? And he cracked up. And I was like, why? Why would you go to a bar and have just one drink? He said, can you do it? And he's laughing. And I'm like, yeah, I could go to a bar and have one drink. And he said, can you do it for a month? I'm like, a month? Every time I go to a bar, just have one drink? And he said, yeah. And I'm like, okay. And he said, 3 months? 3 months? Every time I go to a bar, just have one drink? And I'm starting to think about the controlled drinking that I've been trying to do. And I'm like, yeah, I could do it for 3 months. He goes, six? I'm like, 6 months? Yeah, I could do six. He said, a year? I said, now you're getting personal. You know, and I thought about it and I knew. I had already tried doing controlled drinking. And once I started to get that buzz on, I was off to the races. And so I did go to my first 12-step meeting with them. They said, was anybody at that meeting for their at their first, second, or third meeting after their last drink? And he promptly shoved his elbows into a rib cage and my hand shot up. And I said, hi, I'm Julie, and I'm just visiting. And, you know, I thought it was going to be a bunch of old men and old women sitting in a church basement smoking cigarettes and talking about how old Airy served old Joe at the bar and everything. And most of the people there were old people, but their eyes were clear. And it was 7 o'clock at night and their eyes were clear. And I hadn't seen that in years. And I was like, wow. And they were happy and they were laughing. And I'm like, what's this all about? And so I did. I started going to meeting the church, but I was still afraid that God was just waiting for me, that he was going to kill me. Because in the third step in a 12-step program is you got to give your life back to God again. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a dead woman walking, because the minute I give my life to him again, he's going to kill me. So right before I gave birth, June, I was at the third step and I went out with Francie, who was a Al-Anon, black belt Al-Anon. And I said, you know, I said, I'm dead. If I give my life to God, he's going to kill me, man. And if I give my life to God, then am I going to have to keep the baby? I can't keep the baby. I'm screwed me up. I'm still screwed up. I'm a month and a half sober. You know, how the heck can I raise him and raise me? My parents threw me in, told me to never bring that N-word in their house because it was a biracially mixed baby. There was nobody else in my corner to help me raise it. And I had no clue. And I knew I was really messed. And I said, what if I do this? And am I going to have to move? Am I going to have to stay? And she kept saying, either he is or he isn't. And I, what about this? What about that? Either he is or he isn't. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, either God is everything or he's nothing. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I know that he's not nothing. And so he is everything. So, you know, they say a lot of times, they say, you know, a day at a time, stay sober a day at a time, sometimes an hour at a time. And so I knew I, you know, literally had to come to Jesus. And so the next morning I got up and I said, good morning, God, it's Julie. I'm reporting for duty. And you know, I wanted to get up on the roof. Couldn't I just get on the roof and wave a white flag? And there was no way I was going to get my 227-pound and a half-month pregnant rear end up on that roof. And so I was like, okay, but if I say the prayer, if I go underneath the bed and the house caves in, I'll survive it. And there's no way that I was going to get my 227-pound, eight-and-a-half-month pregnant body underneath that bed either. So I was like, okay, have me for one day. And, you know, I think about it now and it's so arrogant, but I was so terrified. And I went to work, did my thing, came home that night, getting ready for bed. And I checked, I had underwear on and they were clean. So that means I didn't get run over by a Mack truck. So I was still really alive. And and I was like, okay, Lord, thank you for this day. And I just did that every day, a day at a time, every day, just kept saying, okay, Lord, I give my life to you. And something that really helped me was one of the ladies in one of the meetings said, come here. Come here, Grace. This is Grace. And this is what I learned after I gave up the booze. And one of the ladies in the meeting said that G-O-D is D-O-G backwards. And they said that, you know, you need to have a personal relationship with God. And you talk to him like you would your friend. You talk to him like you would a mentor. And you just talk to him and tell him everything that's going on. they said, and she said that dogs are, God is just like dogs. You come home from work and the dog's like, oh, Mom, I'm so happy to see you. I missed you all day. I thought about you all day. I love you. You're the best thing in the world. And you're enjoying all the love and everything. And you're thinking, going, yeah, but I made a big mistake at work, you know. And she's like, but you're here and I love you. I'm so happy. And I want to play with and love you. Give me all this attention. Isn't this fun? So that's how I learned to. That's how I learned to have that, begin that relationship with God. You know, and that's how I learned grace, is merited favor. No matter what happened during the day, come on, good girl. No matter what happened during the day, still loves me. No matter how many times I've screwed up so many times since then. I got married, bankrupt, 9 years into the marriage, that he had married someone else before he married me. So he had committed bigamy and God never honored our vows. And, you know, it's just betrayal after betrayal, but I had so many times there because I kept leaning on, God, you know, I kept leaning on that relationship and developing that relationship over the years. You know, they said, stick with the winners, go to a church that's Bible believing, watch what they're doing. If people are walking what they're talking, those are the type of people you want to be around. You know, if they say one thing and then they go out and chew out a waitress at a restaurant, that's not the person that you want to hang out with. You know, so I had to learn everything after getting sober. It's been 38 years. You know, I've built 4 successful businesses since I got sober. Yeah. And I don't do any mind-altering chemicals. I quit smoking. I quit gambling. The thing that I have a challenge with now is just getting the weight down and getting it off. I'm only down about 60 pounds. So, you know, we're getting there. But, you know, it's just, after about the second young people's conference that I went to, cause I was like, how can you be young and be an alcoholic and everything? And, you know, after I went to the second one, the theme was a life worth living. And I was 2 years sober and I was like, yeah, you know. It is. It really is a life worth living. I had a lot of friends. I had good friends, hung out with people that were sober and clean. And, you know, we went up to Great America and had a good time. Didn't have to get high or drunk to do it. And, you know, if I still want attention, I could go out to the middle of the park, strap myself naked to a slide and yell and get attention. But, you know, I don't have to do that. You know, I don't have to drink to do that. So there's a lot of freedom in that. You're laughing.
I just love how authentic and raw you are. You're just like, here it is. And I just think that that's amazing and really helps people connect with you and your story. So now you've been clean and sober for 38 years. And so talk a little bit about what your life looks like now and how you help other people now.
I love it. You know, when I was married, I had married older, and he was, he was parading around as a Vietnam veteran. We found out later on that he never stepped foot in Vietnam. He was Hank was a pathological liar. He was a narcissist. And so we were helping Vietnam veterans. It was a group, Vietnam, veterans helping families, helping veteran families. And we got him into rap groups, got a lot of the finally get into the VA hospitals and test for Agent Orange. We learned the principles that we had learned in a 12-step program and church, you know, the Beatitudes and helping others. And that was a lot of fun. I mean, it was just great. And then I started helping young people, mostly women, get off the alcohol and stay off the alcohol and not do any mind-altering chemicals, because a lot of people will switch addictions, gambling, sex, the whole nine yards. And lately, I finally got to move back to Colorado. I forgave him when I found out about the bigamy and he had sued me for divorce. And that was a big betrayal. And I was able to forgive him. And that was because I learned to pray for the person and ask God to give them everything that I would want for myself, you know, love, peace, prosperity, and everything. And if I did that every day, whether I wanted to or not, for 2 weeks, that resentment would go away. And where there would be hatred, there would be love. And where there was anger, that there would be compassion and empathy. And it took only 4 days. And then I was laying in bed and I was like, wow, somebody had to have really screwed him over when he was really young in order to create such a different life, you know? And so I forgave him. And about 3 years after that, 9/11 hit. I had just opened my own travel agency a couple of years before. That was the second travel agency that I built from the ground up. The first one I did was when I was 27, downtown Chicago. And nobody was traveling. So business came to a screeching halt. I was supposed to rehouse 2 days after, and the bank pulled out of the deal because I had no income, and travel agents had no income because everybody was stuck all over the world. And so I wound up selling my house, moving out to Colorado, which is where I've always wanted to be since I came out here when I was little riding. And I live in a small valley. I have a small 5-acre ranch. That's where I was before we got on. I was out irrigating. God, if I had known about irrigating, I don't know if I would have bought it. City girl out to the country. My neighbors just crack up. And so, you know, I love getting involved in the church. We have a pantry. My favorite thing of late, though, is in Ubering. In Durango, we get a lot of tourists. And then during the off season, we have a lot of locals. And it's just become a ministry. Every day when I get into the car to go out, except now, because we don't have much going on right now. But every day I would say, okay, Lord, bring the people that you want me to minister to and give me the words to say it. And every single day, I always knew what that one person was. And someone's like, you got to write all these stories down and write a book. And I'm like, who'd want to read the book? You know, I'm like, yeah, somebody's already done something, stories of an Uber driver. But, you know, it's, I don't always talk about Jesus. I don't always talk about God, but I get to listen to people and I can help them. I've done free rides. I mean, it's just being the hands and feet, you know, just helping people, because not everybody is in a great mood and ready to party and go see things. You know, there are people that just lost their jobs or are running away from their boyfriends that they just got a quarter of protection against and jumped into my car and said, come on, get out of here. He's right behind me. And I'm like, you're not my person. I have a guy. I'm not your Uber. And you gotta go. He's right behind me. And I'm like, ma'am, you have the wrong Uber. I there's someone else coming out. But I just got out of court and quarter of protection. And he's right down that sidewalk. Close the door, put your feet in, close the door, let's go. Canceled the ride, took her home. You know, I offered to go by her house every night because I'm in Durango all the time. Send me a picture of this creep and I'll come by the house and I'll keep an eye out. And if I see him hanging out, then I'll call the cops. And she's like, you do that for me? And I'm like, yeah, of course I would, you know. I'm helping people. I really enjoy it. I started my own business. My fourth successful business is Errand Girl, and I run errands for people and businesses, and that's been really crazy. And I've got Grace here, who I just rescued last year. She loves to go on rides, and so we drive all over the Southeast. And that's what turns me on, is helping people. And ever since we went to class together a couple years ago now and met in May, it was so funny too, because when we met and everything, you had just gotten your book published, Create a Life You Love. And then I have A Life Worth Living, and I'm like, woo, we're kind of on the same page here. We're on the same trajectory here, you know, and I've just been so impressed with how you were doing everything and the chapters and how creative you are and everything. And I was just like, wow. You know, I mean, and I was helping people, you know, driving somebody around after the conference and whatnot. And I don't know, that's where I get charged, is just helping people. Because, you know, when you see God working all the time and miracles happening and things turning around that shouldn't turn around, it's like, wow, you know, it's so cool to be a part of that. So that's what I like to do. I miss it. It's been 3 months. And it's like, come on, let's get out here. You know, but it's scary with COVID and, but you know, it's coming.
Absolutely.
Now I'm learning how to create a course too.
Ooh.
Like you have.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, I know you founded a company, A Life Worth Living, and you're creating a course. So kind of what are the things that you're going to put in the course?
So what I'm doing is, because I've learned I have to narrow down into a niche, because I've gone through so many things. People look at my life, they hear my testimony, and they're like, through that, I can get through what I'm going through. And I'm like, yeah, you can, you know, in counseling, church, whatever it is that, you know, you can get, that can help you through 12-step programs. So I was giving my testimony all over into different churches and whatnot. And that's catching up because nobody's having any events anymore. We're all online. So I figured out how to build a course for women who are between the ages of like 20 and 65 that think they may have a problem with alcohol, that may have having suicidal thoughts, and also want to get off the sauce, get free from it totally, and that are open to the means of Christianity and to Christ, and have a deeper relation, have a more deeper relationship with Him. So I'm Big Day Challenge, which I'm hoping to launch in 2.5 weeks. And then I'm going to do a course. Yeah, I know, right? Finally, almost 2 years. God, that's been so hard. But then have a course. And then, you know, from the course and everybody getting around and everybody, you know, getting to know one another and getting sober and you know, not being afraid of if they knew God before coming back and knowing that He's not going to kill them. He didn't kill me. He's not going to kill them. He's like that dog waiting at the door. I love you. Come on. I'm waiting for you. I'm so excited. Oh, they want to do that. And then have a deeper relationship, you know, learn how to, I got all kinds of tips and tricks from 38 years of how not to get drunk. If you don't drink, you won't get drunk. But, you know, tips like 4th of July is coming up, right? Have an escape plan, things like that, and have a community around it. And then they can stay in the community afterwards. And then if there's other women that are already sober that are sick of going to 12-step meetings and really want to get free from it and get on with their life, where they can get back into church and do more in church or do more whatever that they are call to do, then they can come into the community too and get reinforced and a lot of different teachings. I mean, forgiveness is one of them. You know, my mom mentally and physically and emotionally abused me all my life until she died about 6 years ago. And she laid off of me about 3 weeks before she passed away. And for the first time, she said, I love you. And I'm proud of you. And you're going to do well. And that was the opposite from, you know, you'll never amount to be crap and you'll be fat the rest of your life. And I had prayed for her too. And long before that, I was in bed one night and I had this picture and I could see this little girl about 3 or 4 years old, long black curly hair down to her shoulders. She had that blue dress on that poofed out over this, had those black patent leather shoes with the anklets folded over, and she was just crying. She looked so afraid and so scared and so hurt. And I was like, Lord, who is that? And He said, it's your mother. And tears just came. And I had realized from the father had told me that her mom died when she was 3 or 4 years old. And then she had 9 or 10 different brothers and sisters that we didn't know about out there in Ohio somewhere that she never stayed in contact with. And that she was sent to go live with her aunt and uncle. And I was just like, I had empathy. It doesn't justify what she did, but it made sense. And I could see that hurting people hurt people. You know, it was never personal. And that was huge. And getting that freedom and getting that load off of you and all the houses lifting and all that heaviness, it's like, wow. You know, it's what was enabled me to go back and visit her in Illinois, Colorado, and to help out as much as possible, even though she's remained emotionally and mentally and verbally abusive. And, you know, and that's where the freedom comes in, you know, is the joy. The joy of the Lord is my strength, you know, and helping other people and going out and doing all this crazy stuff. I mean, we're out here in the mountains out in ATVs. If you had told me 40 years ago that I'd be out in the mountains on a four-wheeler, I would have told you were smoking some dope and that it was some pretty bad dope. There's no way. I mean, you know, we're kayaking in lakes and we're going up in wildflower fields and going up on the Continental Divide and horseback riding. And man, it's just great. Those are the desires of my heart. And God wants to fulfill those desires that we have. So yeah, I'm real fortunate to be able to be here in Southwestern Colorado. You know, great church, great people, and just a lot of opportunities to help one another. And so now I get to do that through this course. And, you know, go live, share more. I got some stories. We all crack up with these Zoom meetings and everything. I've been hanging out with some old friends back in Illinois, and we'll hang out afterwards because we used to go out to eat afterwards. And we just sit, we just crack each other up still. You know, it's good. It is a life worth living. And, you know, I believe it's a life worth living. And you already know that. You know, you created an exceptional life, and I've been privileged to be able to see you grow in the last year and a half and flourish. And look at you, you got your podcast. I mean, you're rocking it. So yeah, it's cool.
It wasn't very long ago that we had a multi-hour phone call where you were going to start a podcast, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that. And then here I am. I don't know. COVID.
Oh, bought that course. You know, I'm like, why do I have to make money off people? Freely given, freely received. Do you know, freely receive, freely give. What, you know, I fought the course. And I was like, okay, I get it. You got to make some money in order to get your message out. And so I'm like, okay, so COVID-19, you know, whoop me into, I'm doing it. So it's, yeah, learning all the tech stuff like we're doing now. Oh man, it's crazy. Yeah. I hope it comes out on the Facebook end.
I think so. So far, we've had lots of people jump on and off while we've been together. My mom is watching. Hey, Mom. So yeah. Normally she's pretty good about typing. If it's like, if she's like, I can't even hear anything. She said, Chantel, great show. So she's my cheerleader that'll type in there if it's really not good quality. So
cool.
Yeah. Real quick, while we still have you on with us, Julie, tell us what the name of your course is going to be and how people can connect with you, and talk about your 5-day challenge and how people can sign up for that if they're interested.
Okay. So the 5-day challenge, I named it Put the Plug in the Jug. And that means, you know, for 5 days, not drink on a daily basis. And I'll teach them, you know, the three things, which is trust God, adjust my attitude, adjust and allow God to make changes inside of me. Because I found out that I wasn't always the victim, that I was the abuser. I've hurt a lot of people in my life, and so I had to terms with that, and allow him to make changes inside of me. And then to give it away, you know, to assist others. And and tips and tricks on how to get around it and how to get through the day. Everything is so stressed out because, you know, I've heard a lot of people have lost their sobriety during COVID and being quarantined. They fell off the wagon and got drunk, suicide up. It tears my heart every time I hear of somebody checking out of life because, you know, I fought that. I've had 4 or 5 brushes with suicide, and you know, it's really worth sticking around. And so I show them that, you know, and we have fun. And then the course after that is going to be more in depth. I can only do 5 days. I'll have them add up the money that they normally spend on booze for the week, and then divide it by 7. And then every day they need to pay themselves for not drinking for that day and put it in an envelope and then go do something fun afterwards, but not celebrating with a bottle of champagne like I wanted to do after my first year of sobriety. So, yeah, they can contact me on Facebook. It is Facebook, Life Worth Living Online. And they can also email me at Julie Eisenman. And I think it should show up there, EISENMAN, at AOL.com. So that shows my age. I got sober right after I turned 20. So I'm 58. That's how I know how old I am. If I know how old I am, I know how long I've been sober. And if I've been, because first, I was 20 when I got sober. So I turned 21 and 3 weeks later, it was my 1 year anniversary. So it was pretty easy to know how many years I had. And it was just back to back, and then what else? Oh, I have gifts. I brought something for your listeners. Yay. We always like gifts, right? So if anybody email me, if they want to get, I put a, this is my logo. I love this. Mountains, sunshine. I love it. And it's tragedies, hope, and laughter from tragedies turned into triumphs. And it's a lot of different scriptures on hope and joy and where we get our joy from and six reasons why we should trust God, which is really difficult for people who've been abused. Faith. My favorite scripture, Isaiah 55, that's in there, who I am in Christ. And it's just really uplifting scriptures and everything. And then if there's anybody in your group, since I'm starting this for the first time, anybody that's with you at Create a Life You Love wants to do the challenge, it's free for everybody. But anybody that wants to do it, the challenge, if they want to stick around and do the course, which I will probably charge some money for, but I haven't decided how much yet, it'll be free for them. And so they're more than welcome to do that. Just email me, let me know, have them email me and let me know, that they want to do that. And I'm more than happy to give all your people that are creating their life that they love, of course, and it can be really any addiction. It doesn't have to be alcohol, but for marketing, I was told stick with alcoholics because that's what you're good at and that's what you're an expert at. And I'm like, okay, well, we could talk about a lot of other addictions. I used to go to 12-step meetings to go, I'm addicted to anything I do more than twice and like, and that includes Nintendo, but yeah, well, fun. I guarantee them we'll have fun. We'll laugh. Hopefully they will stick it out for 5 days and see that they actually can do it for 5 days and get paid for it. They're going to pay themselves. So that'll be a lot of fun. What else?
That's awesome. I will definitely put in, I'll link your email, julieeisenman@aol.com. And I already have your Facebook link. It's already linked in the description. So anybody that wants to get in touch with Julie, you can message her on her Facebook or you can email her and I'll get that linked up for you as well. So
yeah, the page is A Life Worth Living online. And my testimony's on there, and there's just a whole bunch of stuff. I try and be positive for people, because half the stuff that I got into, I created, and you just see how God just keeps going, yep, come on. He's the good father, you screw up and you fall down. He's like the father that picks you up and brushes your little backside off and your bottom, and he says, okay, go on, try it again. Get out there, do it again. It's just amazing, we keep doing it. If you're not going to have fun, why do it, right?
I love it. Yes, your positivity and joy helps everyone around you have fun. And I loved that I was able to connect with you heading to Colorado, and then you had connected. You completely brought our whole cohort together and provided socialization opportunities for all of us to meet and interact in person. So you are just a bright, shining light in the world that brings people together. So thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Create a Life You Love podcast. I would love to hear from you about your biggest takeaways. Share them with me on Facebook or Instagram at Create a Life You Love Coaching. If you love this podcast, be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's very much appreciated. That's it for now. Enjoy the journey.